you know, I really believe in that thing about what are you really curious about and what gives you energy and paying attention to that. And so, yeah, I've got kids at uni and I've got one just about to start. And I read this thing online the other day and it said, don't worry about trying to choose what to do forever. Just worry about thinking about what you want to do first. And it's kind of like that idea of just like where I'm at right now with what I know, the resources that I have, where I am in the world, what am I curious about? What gives me energy? What can I show up for? What matters? And having those questions and that kind of just, you know, I followed the scent of that.
Do you love your life as a small business owner? Let's be real, sometimes we just don't. It's my hope that this, the My Daily Business podcast, helps you regain a little of that lost love through practical, actionable tips, tools, and tactics, interviews with creative and curious small business owners, and in-depth coaching episodes with me, your host, Fiona Kalacki. With more than 20 years experience in marketing, brand, content, and systems, and having now helped thousands of small business owners, I know what it takes to build a business that you can be proud of and that actually aligns with your values, your beliefs, and your hopes for the future. So much of our daily life is spent working on and in the businesses and the brands that we are creating. And so it makes sense to actually love what you do. So let's get into this podcast and help you figure out how to love your business and your life on the daily. Hello and welcome to episode 388 of the My Daily Business podcast. Today it is an interview and this is with somebody who you can already hear the smile. I have known for quite a few years and somebody that I so respect and admire and look up to, and definitely know that you're going to get so much from this interview today, as I did even recording this interview and getting to talk to this person. Before we get stuck into that, I want to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians on the lands on which I meet these people and talk and record this podcast, and that is the Wawarong and Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and I pay my respects to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge that sovereignty has never been ceded. The other thing I wanted to remind you is that it is group coaching final time to apply. If you're listening to this in real time, we do kick off early March. And if you would like to be part of this, you can apply and find all the information at mydailybusiness.com/group coaching. If you're listening to this at a different time, you can always join the waitlist, or if it's later in the year, apply for the next program that we are running. All right, let's get into today's small business interview. So I was trying to remember where I met this person for the first time, and it was way back, I think, in 2016 when I was running an event at Acme, and I believe that a mutual friend of ours had invited this person to the event, and afterwards we got chatting, and instantly her warmth and friendliness and just this wonderful curiosity about life came through. And in the years since, I have just experienced that same warmth, that generosity, just the most beautiful spirit. And so I had to invite her on to the podcast. Now, who am I talking about? I'm talking about the wonderful Kylie Lewis, founder of Ovkin, which many of you will know. And I'm sure that many of you have also read her book, The Leap Stories, and maybe followed the blog for a long time, The Leap Stories, and have followed Kylie through all the iterations of her business. Now, Kylie today is a leadership expert and works with people in the scene of understanding who we are as leaders. And that doesn't necessarily, as she talks to today, mean just people in kind of the executive or C-suite sort of level, or the MDs or the CEOs of a business, but rather any one of us, whether we have a business, whether we work in-house, just how we show up as leaders in our own lives, and also in this case, because this is a business podcast, how we show up as leaders in our businesses. Now, Kylie, and it's a fascinating story how she came up with the name of Kin and what it has meant to her in terms of business over the years. But Kylie and I both started in digital marketing and online worlds, and she decided to remove herself from there and start her own business, initially kind of bringing that same information to small business owners. But then over time, the business has evolved and changed and adapted. And she talks in today's podcast how those changes came about and how it ruminated to a point that she was like, yes, this is where I'm going to direct myself in the business. We also talk about all sorts of things, what it was like to work and you know, learn from Brené Brown, how those teachings have impacted the way that Kylie creates her business offerings. But also we look at all sorts of things like, what does it mean to really be vulnerable? How can we create and foster a sense of belonging when we have remote staff or we have people working in different places, sometimes, you know, outside of a physical location? So we talk about so many things. And honestly, I was recording this particular podcast on a very hot day and I had to finish at a certain time so that I could go and collect my children from school. And I honestly was like, oh, I wish I could somehow add another 3 hours of conversation in, because Kylie is that type of person that you just want to keep learning from and growing with. And so it is just such a delight for me to have her on this podcast. I had her down as a person to invite onto the podcast when I started this podcast years ago. And so it is absolutely wonderful to have her on. And Kylie reminded me as we were hitting record that the last time that we'd recorded together was at the very, very start of the pandemic and lockdowns here in Melbourne. And I had started a free Facebook group initially just to have people in there to share, you know, how they were going in the middle of lockdown and pandemic. And what I did was to invite people in to share their wisdom. And Kylie was the very first person that I invited into that group. And we were just laughing and looking at, gosh, how much has changed over the last 4 years, but also how much hasn't changed. And the world is in such a flux still. And so we talk about that as well and what it means to be human in today's world and what it means particularly for business owners and dealing with everything that's going on in the world, as well as trying to run a business and just trying to show up as a good human, which Kylie is doing incredibly well at. So here it is, my interview with the wonderful Kylie Lewis from Of Kin. Welcome to the podcast, Kylie. How are you feeling about life right now?
Thanks for having me, Fiona. That's a really difficult question to ask specifically on this day, at this time that we're meeting. But I think it's a really important one to ask and not take so flippantly, because the context in which we're meeting today is pretty full. When you ask me the question, how am I feeling about life? I'm feeling very heavy-hearted for the conflicts that are happening, multiple conflicts that are happening across the world that we're living through, and particularly what's happening today as we gather. So I'm feeling very heavy-hearted about that. I'm also feeling kind of that paradoxical gratitude for being able to just show up in my life each day, caring for my own family and helping them kind of navigate into the various stages that they're all happening in their life, and also just wondering what the year ahead lies. You know, February is kind of that landing back into the year after spending some time out of our routines and, you know, looking kind of at the somewhat fresh slate ahead of us and thinking what's possible. So how I'm feeling about life is paradoxical.
Oh, I could not agree more. And you've just summed it up so eloquently, which is something you're very well known for and something that you do in your business. You take such deep things and complex ideas and you bring them in such beautiful way. And so tell us about your business. What is Of Kin? Why the name? And when and why and how did you start it?
So the current iteration of Of Kin, basically, I'm a leadership facilitator and trainer, educator, coach. I work with teams and I work with leaders who come along to do public programs on leadership. And specifically, the one that I'm kind of most heavily invested at the moment is the Dare to Lead program based on the research of Brené Brown. And also more recently, kind of digging into what does psychological safety look like, feel like, what are the behaviors of those, based on the work of Amy Edmondson and Timothy Clark. And so I run predominantly online programs for teams, and I also do public programs for anybody who wants to come along and do that. And I run webinars and workshops around topics of courage, vulnerability, leadership, rising after setbacks, living into values, what does trust look like, understanding vulnerability, you know, the things that make us human. But before that, I was a digital strategist and I worked in digital for 20 years. And I kind of leapt out to do my own thing. And I was I was working in digital strategy until I kind of came across Brené Brown's work when I went, you know, that degree that I got in psychology and sociology way back when, I actually really feel like listening to her, that's actually where I want to be. You know, I was where I was working, I was sitting in marketing overseeing this massive digital transformation project, but I was looking over at HR doing training and education and learning, and I was feeling pulled towards that. But the leap that I made to start my own business was doing what I was already doing it, but doing it on my terms and taking what I knew from the corporate world out to small businesses. But the funny thing was that the name was actually registered much, much earlier than that. Ofkin was an idea that I had while I was working in three jobs prior to that, that was a side hustle, which I really wanted to make organic cotton t-shirts. And I knew that, you know, to make them fair trade and sweatshop free and organic and all of that kind of stuff, that there would be a price point at that, that people who really appreciated and understood the ethics behind consumption would be prepared to pay for. And those, so they felt like kin. They felt like people who were, you know, somewhat shared similar values and ideas. So it was next of kin, took off the next and just had of kin, and parked that idea and then picked up the name and went, actually, it works really well when you're talking about social media and digital connections and online communities. And it works just as well, I think, now in the work that I'm doing, because it's all about our common humanity.
Wow. I had no idea about the t-shirts idea, like business. And it reminds me of when I was about 18, I went on this journey into questioning the faith that I'd been brought up in and everything else. And I went on a big journey of reading all these different books. And I remember one from the Dalai Lama, which talked about being present and thinking as small in detail as the thread that has been put into a button that is on your shirt, and who did that, and that we're all connected. And yeah, everything that you just said reminded me of that passage and me being like, yes, we are all connected. The whole world is connected. Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. I love that whole story, and that you can, there must have been a seed somewhere in you that did that. And then as it changed and developed, and it's still so perfectly aligned to everything that you're doing. It's so, oh, I love these. I love asking people these questions because you get all these amazing answers. And so, as you've said, it has changed over the years. And can you tell us how, like you've mentioned that you got into Dr. Brené Brown's work and changed things, but how do you decide to shift, and what does that look like on a practical level, going from, you know, you used to do back in the day, Instagram workshops and marketing workshops and business coaching, and then into more leadership and organizational stuff and the Brené Brown work. When do you decide to change? And then how do you practically even share that change with your audience?
It was a real iteration over time. So the leap that I took to go out of working in corporate to doing something for myself was really driven by a big 12 to 18 months before that of a lot of personal challenges and professional challenges. And I sort of got to the end of that period of time and just thought, I can't keep going the way that I'm going. Something has to change. And if I gave myself permission to think about that, what would it look like? And, you know, I was working for a brand that was a very aspirational brand at the time. And it encouraged you to dream. Like, one of the products that we had was a 101 Dreams Journal. It was my favorite product. And so I kind of drank the Kool-Aid and thought, oh, what are the dreams that I have for my life? And my, you know, that was 10 years ago. So my kids were still at primary school. And I was thinking about the kind of role model that I wanted to be for them, you know, and the kind of lives that I was trying to help cultivate for them and the values for us. And I wanted them to believe in their judgment, to trust their instincts, to cultivate the curiosity and the courage to investigate what lights them up, and to know that they can craft a life around that. And so, you know, reaching this juncture where it was like, I actually can't just do this anymore. I'm physically exhausted. I'm mentally kind of spent. And I've got this real itch to scratch. So the leap was made, you know, into doing what I already knew how to do, but in a different environment. And when I'd given myself the permission to do that, it was when I landed in that, it was like, okay, what lights me up? What actually gives me energy and that I enjoy doing and that I'm curious about, and giving myself permission to do that. And, you know, working in the area of digital, as I'm sure that you know, it's 1 year in digital is like a dog year in terms of the amount of change that you yes. have to straddle so quickly. And so, you know, no sooner had I delivered an Instagram workshop and a new feature had been rolled out, or there was different functionality, or it was, you know, a brand new way to do something. And I kind of just got exhausted by that. And I also think I just started to see the whole game that social media is. And I don't know, I just kind of went, I just don't want to be kind of part of that. And I don't want to feel under the pressure to have to be across every single change and know how to do this. You know, I was barely, I guess, one or two steps ahead of everyone else. And I think, you know, I came across Brené's TED Talk on the power of vulnerability, and it just touched a place in me that was everything that I had experienced in those last 18 months, but also probably the 42 years that had preceded that. And, you know, I had studied psychology and sociology at university, so it was already in me that I was curious about humanity and the way that we work and live and grow together and what we need to do to understand about ourselves and how to have the kind of relationships in our lives that we craved. And so I kind of worked in digital for a while and kept doing that and having fun, but I was being pulled into this other direction that I recognized, actually, this is really an important part. And what do I think is missing in a lot of professional education is the humanizing of work and the human experience of working, and particularly coming out of digital where it's 24/7, where it's just relentless innovations and cycles. And I was in retail, so it's, you know, it's just a constant cycle. We never really get a downtime. You know, we were getting sales reports 3 times a day. I was like, I just need to come up for breath at this point in my life and just look at, what's the legacy that I want to have? What do I really want to invest my time in? Because I really want to claim my time and my energy to the things that I feel that are really important. And so I just kind of followed my curiosity, and it was kind of, you know, a bit of luck in that I was in the right place at the right time. But also too, I took advantage of those moments and created a plan to say, well, if I'm working in this field at the moment, what does the path look like to be able to shift? And, you know, and I wrote the Leap Stories, the blog series about people who had made courageous career leaps as a way of me investigating how had other people done that and sharing that with other people who also had similar questions and were curious like I was, to help remind me that it is possible and that it doesn't necessarily happen in one big leap, that it's actually a lot of little leaps over time. And so I did go into coaching, one-on-one coaching, but I think I was really felt the pull to kind of get a bit more scale happening. Because when you're working, I think, in something that you feel is really important and impactful and can really help people where they are in their careers and their lives, working one-on-one is powerful work, but it's also slow work. And so I kind of wanted to balance that out a little bit more. So working into programs and, you know, having the opportunity to bring a group of different people together to also hear their experiences and learn from them at the same time of thinking about they're all going to now go back and share that or have some impact or conversations with all those people that are in their networks. That's where I moved to. I still do a little bit of one-on-one coaching, but I have a little bit more of a balance now.
Oh my gosh, so much in that I can relate to when you were talking about yep and yep and yep, and particularly that digital never switch off, and then added that to retail. And it's just, and even now, I can't even imagine, like, you and I both left, and I know what company you were at and you know what company I was at a similar time. I think you might have left a couple of years before, but I can't even imagine being in those jobs now, like the extra stuff of TikTok, YouTube, da-da-da-da-da, like it's just constant. So yeah, I hear you on so much of that. And so you have mentioned that one of your things that you do a lot of now is the Dare to Lead workshops, and you've trained with the amazing Brené Brown. So how did you go from, I watched her TED Talk like millions of other people around the globe, to I'm actually going to train and take her teachings and then work them into my own business? What was that like? And then can you talk us through how utilizing, you know, a licensed framework or program, I'm not sure if the language actually works?
So I think when I listened to that TED talk and she was talking about vulnerability, it was actually not only resonant for all of the human stuff that was happening in my life behind the scenes, but it was also that vulnerability is social media. Vulnerability is putting yourself like out in the world. And what I found was that it was very complementary to the training that I was giving. So it wasn't just about, you know, here's tactically or practically how you create a piece of content and upload it. It was also the mindset that went along with it about recognizing that it actually feels quite vulnerable to put ourselves out there and to share our stories and to talk about the things that are important to us. And so it was quite complimentary in that way. But I guess, you know, lucky for Google, I'd heard this talk and it resonated with every cell in my body. I was like, you have decoded what it means to be human. You are the only person that I know of in my lifetime that is sharing these insights and research in a way that is accessible, that makes sense to me and that I understand, and that helps me understand myself better and my relationships better. And I was just fortunate at that time that there was trainings available at that time. I had to go and become a certified coach in order to meet the credentials. So to become a certified facilitator of that work, you had to apply for candidacy at that time. So this was the Daring Way, which preceded Dare to Lead. And you had to have a minimum kind of entry-level requirements to even be considered for candidacy. So, you know, it was a bit of a road to go, okay, well, if, you know, I'm not going to necessarily go back and become a fully registered psychologist or social worker or after what does make sense, what's the path for me. And so becoming a certified coach was the way that I went. And also those skills are exceptionally helpful. And so once I did that, then I was able to apply to do the program, the training, which was really excellent training. And then after that period of time, you have to register with an organization that has a board of oversight and ethics, and you need to have professional insurance, public liability insurance, professional indemnity insurance to be able to do that. And you need to maintain that every year. And then when Dare to Lead came out in 2018, we were offered to be able to become upskilled in that. And that was such a blessing because I was working with Daring Greatly and Rising Strong curriculum and trying to create it sort of in this framework of what it would look like for businesses and workplaces and teams. And I had this kind of thing that I'd hacked together called Brave Businesses. And so when Dare to Lead came out, it was like, oh, this is kind of, you know, now gives it the credibility of looking through this through leadership and a business lens. And so I was really off to the races when that happened. So it was just, I was in the right place at the right time to do it. But I'd also made that opportunity and those choices earlier on to do that and to get curious. You know, I really believe in that thing about what are you really curious about and what gives you energy and paying attention to that. And so, yeah, I've got kids at uni and I've got one just about to start. And I read this thing online the other day and it said, don't worry about trying to choose what to do forever. Just worry about thinking about what you want to do first. And it's kind of like that idea of just like where I'm at right now with what I know, the resources that I have, where I am in the world. What am I curious about? What gives me energy? What can I show up for? What matters? And having those questions and that kind of just, you know, I followed the scent of that.
Oh, I love that. And I can't even imagine what type of mum you must be to these kids at that such important age. You're so wonderful in terms of the way that you practice what you preach and such an example. So I'm sure that your children are like, go mum. And also later in life will be like, wow, she really did lead by example and show us what's possible. I was actually just talking to my neighbour who has just gone into year 11 the other day on my dog walk. I bumped into her and she was like, yeah, I started year 11. It's really serious now. And I was like, it's serious, but you got the rest of your life. So like, don't think that these next 2 years are, that's it. There's no change, because you can change and adapt. And what you're curious about when you're 18 might be very different to what you're curious about at 27. So I love that you had those questions and let them light the way for you. And so let's talk about leadership. What are some of the biggest or most common misconceptions about leadership and personal development that you encounter in your work? And how do you address them in your coaching and your facilitation sessions?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things about leadership that, I mean, I still kind of have my own internal biases of, you know, what I was brought up with, thinking that leadership is something that happens out there and that is tied to a title rather than actually being a conscious choice and a practice. One thing that kind of comes to mind when I think about leadership, I think of the saying about leading our lives. And I often think that leadership is often categorized or boxed into something that we just do with our career or is just done with work. But leadership is actually how am I showing up consciously in my life in all arenas that I show up in? How am I making those decisions for the kind of person that I'm striving to become and to show up as and to be as authentic to myself as I possibly can in all areas of my life? So I think one of the other misconceptions is that leadership is only something to do with work and not something to do in our lives, you know. And I keep coming back to, we, you know, that whole saying is that you lead your life. So what does that actually look like? I think another misconception is that leadership is about strength and stoicism rather than relationships and dialogue and self-awareness and connection and safety. You know, I think part of my own internal bias around thinking who is suitable, you know, as a leader, you know, if it's that whole thing, like, you know, when I say prime minister, what's the first thing that comes to mind? You know, it's a white man.
In a suit.
Yeah, in a suit, right? And so that's kind of what we've seen, you know, in Western cultures at least. So I think there's a misconception that we really have to challenge that kind of automatic bias that has built into that. Leadership is really about the kinds of relationships that we forge and what is made possible through those relationships and the self-awareness that I have in consciously tending to those relationships in a way that brings out the best in people and in the potential for the work that we're doing together. I think that also there's this idea that somehow we arrive at leadership, you know, that it is like, oh, you know, maybe I've got the title or I've got the position or I've got the office or whatever, I've kind of made it. But leadership is a deliberate ongoing practice. You never really fully arrive.
Like parenting, really. You never really arrive. You just keep trying every day.
100%, like 100%. You know, where am I in my life? Or how am I feeling about life? Like I'm having a real reckoning with what does it look like to be a parent of young adults. Mm. When my son finished high school and he was doing BCE during those 2 years of lockdown. And it was like, okay, now he's kind of off into the world. What does that mean for me? Like, what does that look like? And there was a real grief associated with, I don't have to enroll him into things. You know, I don't have to take him shopping for clothes. I don't really have to kind of make him meals. You know, it's just this kind of really weird place at arriving and what that looks like. So yeah, I think that idea that we never really fully arrive as a leader or as a parent or even a human being. I mean, I think, you know, one of my favorite sayings is that we are all a work in progress until the day we die.
Yeah.
And that to me is something that I go by. But I also think, you know, I think a misconception about leadership is that it's loud and visible when it absolutely can be quiet and discerning. You know, I love Susan Cain's work and research into what quiet leadership looks like. And I think also we have this idea of leadership actually kind of tied up with being perfect or having all the answers or always getting it right, rather than it being kind of just a continual striving towards excellence, you know, a healthy striving towards excellence, recognizing that we're going to make mistakes, we're going to stuff it up, we're not going to know all the answers, we're going to need to lean into people and ask for help, we're going to make mistakes that we're going to need to go in and clean up. There are a couple of things.
so many great points in there. And then in that, I would say, and you've said this already, is that you don't need to have staff to be a leader. Like, I think that's one of the things that's really interesting. I've recommended your workshops to numerous clients and some of them have gone and done it, and it's always brilliant feedback, Kylie. But I do have a couple of clients where I've said it and they've been like, oh, but I don't have staff. And I'm like, you're still a leader. And sort of this idea that, oh, unless I have a team of 10, or, you know, only have one or two staff, or I'm only, you know, I'm part of a duo that run this business. And it's like, no, anyone can be a leader. And so in that, because work life has changed, particularly so much since COVID as well, and lockdowns and people are working remotely, what are sort of some of the key ingredients for people who are listening who might be wanting to create that sense of belonging and connection with their teams, but the teams are working remotely, or no one's in the office at the same time, or all of their staff might be in different countries. How do you create that like sense of belonging and that connection and things that are maybe a little easier to do in person?
So I really appreciate the question, but my mind is actually still just back on that response that you have of people who say that I'm not a leader. Or, you know, that I don't lead people, or I don't lead staff, or only have one, and I keep coming back to, well, who's leading your life? How are you consciously leading your life? How are you consciously showing up in other people, with other people in relationships when you're working together, you know, to produce something or to have an impact, or, you know, to affect some change? Or, and so, yeah, that whole idea that we lead others is, you know, is only the domain of leadership. That's why I think it's so important we come back and we recognize that I'm the leader of my life first and foremost before I lead anybody else or anything else. So how do I need to better understand how I show up to myself and in relationships with others? What could be really helpful and with skills around that? So I just wanted to go back and talk about that. And it is kind of tied into this question around belonging, because you know, one of the things Brené talks so beautifully about is about our sense of belonging with others can never be greater than the sense of belonging to ourselves first and foremost. And so that sense of being true to who I am, knowing myself, not betraying myself in order to try and fit in those places. So belonging is, she defines, as a practice that requires us to be vulnerable, to get uncomfortable, and to learn how to be present with people without sacrificing who we are. And it's one of our most primitive needs. You know, it shows up in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and love and belonging go hand in hand. Love belongs with belonging. And so what does it look like to really tend to relationships? What do we need in order to feel like we are seen, we are known, we are appreciated, we are valued? You know, and I think that's a conversation that is actually worth having with your teams, because you don't want to necessarily make assumptions that are one size fits all for everybody or every team or, you know, every person. But this is where I think the work on understanding psychological safety can be really helpful. And so Timothy Clark has this great model called the four stages of psychological safety. And psychological safety is basically about, how safe is it for me to show up vulnerably in this organization? And he talks about, how safe is it for me to belong here? You know, do people know how to pronounce my name correctly? Are they interested in me as a person, not just, you know, as an employee? Are they engaging me with conversations that are relational, not just transactional? Are there opportunities to get to know and show appreciation for me as the human being I am? So, you know, how safe is it for me to belong? The second stage is, how safe is it for me to be a learner? How safe is it for me to ask questions, to admit that I don't know something, to ask for help, to admit when I've made a mistake? Like, all of those things of, how safe is it to be a learner and to recognize that we're all ongoing learners. The third stage is, how safe is it for me to be a contributor, to contribute my ideas, you know, speaking up with new ideas, asking questions that, you know, that get us to think a bit differently, saying that you have a different point of view on something, or, you know, you can see a different way of doing something. So how safe is it for me to speak up and contribute my ideas? Is that welcome? And then the last one, which is, how safe is it for me to challenge the status quo? You know, how safe is it me to really push back and, you know, say, have we really considered this? I'm worried that, you know, we're not being aligned with our values if we do this, or I'm worried about the unforeseen consequences that this might have, or I don't think we're really addressing the core issue of why this is happening in the first place. So I think that's a really useful framework for people to work on, is, how are we showing that people are safe to belong here and that we value them as human beings first and foremost? How safe is it for them to be a learner? How safe is it for them to contribute? And how safe is it for them to challenge? And what are all the processes and mechanisms that we can put in place to ensure that we are addressing those human needs that we have? How do we run meetings? How do we get feedback? How do we give feedback? You know, how do we make sure that we've got regular routines of checking in, regular rhythms of communication? and ways of making sure that when people do have issues and concerns, that they do feel that they will be heard and that is welcome in the service of continual improvement, in the service of building and fostering greater relationships. So, you know, there's no one size fits all. There are things like, you know, making sure that you do have moments for just connecting with people, that it's not all just transactional all the time. And I think when you're working in a virtual environment, there's the potential for that to happen. And so, you know, do you have a Slack channel that's just about sharing photos of your dogs and what you're having for lunch? And, you know, is there a virtual book club or places where we can coalesce, not just on task related things, but on stuff that is the humanness of being together?
So important. As I said to you just before, I'm editing my second book that's coming out soon. Woohoo! Yay! One of the things in there, because I was double checking all the facts and I put this calculation and I went back on the weekend and I was like, is that actually correct? So the average person, if they work 40 hours a week between, let's say, 16 and 70-ish, it's around about 114,000 hours that we're at work. And if you think about, let's say you're an employee of any business and you're, let's say, in a company for 9 years, I mean, that's tens of thousands of hours of your life. And it's so right that when I think about lots of, as you were talking, I was thinking about some of the places that I've worked and I was like, oh dear God, there was no communication outside of, is this done? When is it done? If you think about meetings, you know, it was very hierarchical. Who could get into the meeting? Why is that person in the meeting? Tell them to leave. They're not at our level. You know, it's sort of, there's so much that people can do and you gave so many amazing examples there. And I know that so many people listening will be like, huh. And even I only have one staff who works every day and then she works whatever hours she wants to work in the course of a week. But I know even with us, we'll get, you know, busy and we'll stop doing our one-to-ones and we've, you know, instigated them again recently. And just that Zoom one-to-one and being like, how are you? And, you know, this morning she was like, I haven't heard from, like, how are you? And I was like, oh, you know what? Yeah, this and this and this is happening. So it's really important, especially I think if you have remote staff, to have that, because you don't have the, oh, we just bumped into each other making cups of tea in the coffee room in the morning. You don't have that little conversation happening and it can get really transactional like you talked about.
I was just going to say, there was actually a team that I was working with last week that were going through the Dare to Lead program and they're a remote team. So we had people in New South Wales and Victoria and WA and we were going through the Dare to Lead program. And one of the things that we do in the program is we look at the things that get in the way of building a courageous culture in the organization. We did a bit of a survey based on some options and criteria from Brené's research. And one of the top things that emerged from them was this idea of tying their self-worth to productivity. And it was really interesting and it was a invitation for them to kick off a conversation outside of just the training. But one of the people said, you know, I think part of the reason why he, you know, voted towards that being an issue was because they're working remotely, was they hadn't necessarily redefined what it looked like to show up at work. And there was this idea that, because when you physically show up into an office, you've already met kind of part of an obligation or an expectation or a boundary, you know, that you're physically present. And so that accounts for something. But if we haven't then spent the time to say, if we don't have that environment, how do we define showing up? Because in the absence of data, we will always make up stories. We will make up our own stories about what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And what are people thinking if, you know, if I actually have taken an hour out of the afternoon to take my dog for a walk and pick up the kids from school and, you know, like, and if we haven't actually spent some time going, okay, we're actually in this environment. And what are some of our fears? And this is a great tool of psychological safety too, is to actually have the fear conversation and to say, I'm afraid that, you know, people will think that I'm slacking off, or I'm afraid that if I'm, you know, if I don't answer within 30 seconds, that people don't think of me as an expert or whatever it is. And, you know, to actually say, these are the stories that I'm making up. And the response to those stories at the moment is that I'm creating all this extra work for myself, or, you know, I'm suspicious of other people or whatever it is. And so that idea of what are the boundaries of what's okay and what's not okay, given the context in which we operate now? And let's revisit those. Like, let's set them up and have some common language. What are our non-negotiables? Where's the flexibility? You know, what's some language that we use to check in? Where's the assumption of positive intent we have straight out of the bat before we kind of jump in with judgment? And so part of it was about kind of redefining or getting clarity around what's okay and what's not okay, and kind of defining that for them and initiating that conversation. And the second thing was also making sure that their leaders had really made sure that they understood the value and the strengths that they bring to the organization, and spent some time, you know, giving feedback when things were going well and things that they appreciated, not just when, you know, they had a question or things didn't go well, for example. And again, so that comes down to really making sure that you do know who your staff are. And I think with this organization, it was a for-purpose organization. So they were very invested in the work that they do. It was very meaningful. But also we can forget that the things that we are strong at, we often overlook because they feel easy for us, and we forget how valuable they really are. And so sometimes we need people to remind us that, you know, for the things that we've felt maybe easy and therefore, am I working hard enough? If it feels too easy, that actually you're working within your zone of genius. You're working to your strengths, and we really value that. And if you're looking to be stretched, let us know. But we really see the strength and the value and the characteristics and the skills that you have and how valuable they are.
Yeah. And I feel like, oh, there's so much I want to say on that. But I feel like the other part, and it goes to everything you were saying about leadership, is that it doesn't always have to come from the top down, that feedback. I feel like one of the nice things I remember about one of my last jobs was I was head of marketing, and we were doing this event, and this wonderful woman who worked in the PR team, we got to the event and the floor was really dusty, and I just got a broom and I just started brooming. You know, I had my outfit on and I took my heels off, because heels in general, but I took them off and I was sweeping. And I remember this wonderful woman came up and she's like, "Oh my God, Fiona, what are you doing?" And I was like, "This floor is filthy and people are coming soon." And she was like, "I love that you're such a doer. Like, you didn't ask somebody else to do it. You just were like, this is a problem. I'm going to jump in." And I always remember that feedback, because it was like, because you can have good feedback to anyone. And that's, I think, a really great work culture, where people who are technically below you in the hierarchy of an organizational chart feel comfortable to say, "You're good at this," or, you know, other things as well. But the other thing I was going to say is that fear question. I feel like it's a really good thing that you can do even in any relationship. So one of my good friends, she lives in Amsterdam, and so we do a lot of WhatsApping, and pretty much every single day. And we saw each other in Mallorca last year, and we got this Airbnb, and, you know, we had never really met. And so then spending 5 days together, and she said to me at one point, "Okay, I've got something going on in my head, and I just want to tell you, because it might be wrong, but the story in my head is..." And she said, and you know, there was a bit of cultural differences between someone from Australia, somebody from Amsterdam. And so it was really good the way it was worded, as in, "I have this story in my head, and now I'm going to tell you what the story is." And ever since she said that, we say it all the time. Okay, so the story in my head is, and I think it's such a beautiful way to present something that you might be uncomfortable with, like the fear, in a really nice way, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the kind of rumble starters that we have in the curriculum, is recognizing that we all make up stories and we all have limited data points. And, you know, in between those data points, we make up stories in order for that story to make sense to us, even if it's not factually correct. And so our job isn't to kind of like take that story wholesale and run with it. Our job is to go, this is the story that I'm making up, and it's just a story. And what do I need to do in order to check in with that? And in saying something like, "This is the story I'm telling myself," or "This is the story I'm making up," or even some people kind of, you know, balk at the idea. They think, "Oh, if somebody said to me that they were making up a story, I'd, you know, I'd kind of question them." But, you know, even "This is what's going on for me. This is what's happening for me at this moment, is that this is what I'm thinking, or this is where this is going for me. And I want to check in with you about that." And that's a kind of a recognition that I'm prepared to be wrong. Mm. I'm prepared for that story to be changed. Tell me the story that you're running with and let's compare our drafts, you know, because we're all running around making up stories all the time, all day every long. Day. We're bumping into each other's stories all the time. Mm. And so I think language is really powerful. That's probably the biggest gift, I think, of Brené's work, is giving language to talk about the difficult, murky, wompy kind of places in our lives and be able to speak truth to them or talk about them with a little bit more clarity and getting specific and more accurate about what we're saying. When we were talking about emotional literacy is really about paying attention to our emotions, because we weren't really, well, at least my generation wasn't really brought up to be encouraged to get curious about our emotions, to, you know, think, what might this emotion be telling me, to have a broad emotional vocabulary. You know, the research says that while we can name a whole lot of emotions, when it comes to really describing emotional experiences, most of us are limited to three: sad, mad, and glad. And if all we have is language to express sad, mad, and glad, and not the complexity of human life, we really get very stuck. And so emotional literacy and self-awareness is all around trying to get more granular about the emotions that we experience. So am I sad? I might be sad, but associated with that, or maybe underneath that sadness, might be disappointment, might be overwhelm, might be frustration, might be grief. And the more accurately that we can label our emotions, the more empowered we are to actually move through them and pay attention to what they might be telling us. Susan David's work in emotional agility, she has this great saying. She says emotions are data, not directives. Mm. And so when we can get curious about the data of our emotions, that grows our self-awareness and it enables us to move through our own emotional landscape a little bit better, and also increases our capacity for empathy for showing up with other people. Mm. So I think, you know, when we're thinking about leadership, I think so much of it is tied up with our capacity to know ourselves well enough that when we show up and we have this weird feeling in our belly that we feel our emotions before we actually have cognition around them, that we pay attention to that, that we don't just try and push it aside. Or, you know, we go, when I had that conversation with Fiona, there was this kind of weird thing that was going on that, you know, I'm not quite sure what that's about. Let me sit with that and just have that moment between stimulus and response where I can get curious in that space. So I've got some greater agency of showing up in a way that serves who I want to be.
I could talk to you for hours and hours. So you have obviously been a very wonderful mentor to people in business and in, you know, leadership and in all sorts of ways. Can you share any mentors or books that have been instrumental? I know you're a huge reader. I can see your library behind you, just a smidgen of it. But who has helped you with developing yourself in your business?
Partly when I think about the significant role models that I've had have been women in more senior positions, and they tended to be kind of 10, 15, 20 years older than me. And I always valued their experience. Not every woman, I've got to say, like not necessarily the qualifier, but there have been particular women who I've fostered connections with that I've kept to this day, that we have been friends with, you know, for 20 years, who I will call on for their advice and insight. And when I'm stuck with something, just being able to sit with me and talk it through with me. And they also know me. So, you know, they are the kind of people that will also remind me of my skills and my values as well. So peers in other organizations that are doing similar roles to me. So in my last role, when I think about who was really like, and I was desperate for a mentor because there was no one else in the organization doing my role, or even who really understood digital. And so like looking for other people doing what I was doing, but sort of laterally across the industry, became really helpful. You know, it was like, I'm thinking about changing us to this email platform. What do you guys use? What research did you do? This is, you know, that was really helpful. But kind of like, you know, broader than that, my lineage, you know, I think about the strong line of very remarkable women that I have the great fortune of being birthed from. And life was very difficult for these women. So I kind of draw strength on that. My uncle, who was a disability activist, who made significant changes for people living with disability in Victoria in the 70s, 80s and 90s, is somebody that was really powerful. Growing up with Oprah, like she's probably like the OG, like, yeah. You know, she was having conversations, interviews, human relation, you know, interest stories, when I didn't really see that happening anywhere else. But I mean, probably more recently, the work of Brené Brown has been significant. Playing Big by Tara Moore is another book that I really recommend. The Power of Full Engagement by Tony Schwartz, which is a little bit old now, but he was the first person that I came across talking about energy management and saying how important it was to manage all of our energy and how our physical energy, particularly our sleep, is the kind of root of all of our energies. And so, you know, I read that book at the same summer that I read Leaning In. Mm. And I had such mixed emotions about that book, because I was reading that book as I was really wanting to lean out and felt like I had leaned so far in that I was exhausted. So that was a really good book to help me kind of find that balance. Dan Pink, I love the writing of Dan Pink. His book, The Whole New Mind, was probably one of those other books I read about that time that was like really countercultural to, you know, the very strong hustle, always on, you know, bro tech culture that I had kind of come across in startups. More recently, Essentialism by Greg McKeown was kind of life-changing. And the other ones that I think about, the one that I'm absolutely loving, but I can only read a couple of pages at a time because I highlight absolutely everything then put it down, is The Wild Edge of Sorrow by Frances Weller. I think we don't talk about grief enough. We're scared to talk about grief. And the less we talk about it, the more control it has over our lives and kind of gets stuck in us. And there's a lot to be grieving in the world right now, and it serves no one to pretend otherwise. So I'm loving that book and kind of getting it away left, right and centre. I loved Power by my mate Kemi Mexapil. It's a brilliant book. And Rest is Resistance by Tricia Hersey. So I love a good nap. And I love how she's framed it up actually as an act of resistance and claimed that and given a completely different insight into that, that really pushes against capitalism and patriarchy and colonialism. I'm really loving that. Mean White Supremacy by Leila Saad. I loved the way that she delivered that and how it, you know, it burst out of a 28-day Instagram challenge into a book and just became a really powerful education tool. So they're the kinds of things in terms of books, but, you know, and lots of different podcasts.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So many. And it's funny that you bring up Oprah, because when you, at the start of this conversation, when you said about your own leadership and leading the life that you want, when I was much younger and used to watch the Oprah show with my mum, I remember she talked about how one of her driving mantras, quotes, whatever in life is, and I don't know the quote exactly, so I'll paraphrase it, but something like, I'm the captain of my ship and I get to steer where I'm going. And I always remember that because my dad was a captain on a ship for a long time. So it really honed in. But oh, so many things. And we'll link to all of them, including Kylie's book, The Leap Stories, in the podcast show notes. And so, oh, there's so many questions I want to ask you and I'm running out of time. But right now, when we've had years of COVID and lockdowns and there's wars and there's cost of living crisis and there's just so much going on, and you've always had such sound and solid advice and you're such a good human, what advice, if you could just give a snippet of advice to people right now who are just feeling absolutely spent and at the end of their tether, what would you say?
First, I would acknowledge that that's a really appropriate response for the conditions in which we're living. And to validate your feelings. And I think it can be really easy to say others have it so much worse or so much harder. That can be true. Two things can be true at the same time. And we don't need to minimize the stuff that we're going through in order to also still hold empathy and space for other things that are going on in the world. You know, it comes back to that idea of paradox. We can hold two competing things at the same time. So I would say that absolutely know that your feelings are valid and that are a really appropriate response to everything that we've been going through and continue to go through. Talk about them with an empathic listener. So find somebody who is going to sit with you in the hard truths about what's happening for you in your life and not shy away from those uncomfortable emotions and try and minimize them or fix them or compare them to other things. One of the things that we talk about in the Dare to Lead program is, you know, this trap of comparative suffering. That, you know, that empathy is somehow a pizza where that only has 8 slices. And so I can't give you one because that'll mean that I have less for everyone else. It's like, no, we can actually, you know, grow a bigger pizza with that. So you don't have to do it alone and you shouldn't be doing it alone. We are hardwired to be in connection with other people. We're a social species. We've only ever survived by being in connection with other people. It's when we held on to that belief that we can go it alone that we run into real trouble. So coalesce with people who share your values and, yeah, and give yourselves permission to talk about the hard things and resist the temptation to try and fix it or try to offer advice and suggestions unless it's specifically asked for. Because for many of us, it's just being witnessed and acknowledged and saying, yeah, I get it, that is hard. That can give us the kind of validation of going, okay, that is the case and that is valid. And so the thing that I want to do next is, you know, I think when we are feeling spent and we resist to acknowledge that that's how we're feeling, we can get really stuck in it. It just becomes a self kind of perpetuating cycle. And, you know, so I think also feelings like that can also give us some data about what might be those next steps. They can guide us into exploring alternatives and new connections and making decisions that perhaps we wouldn't otherwise. You know, if I hadn't felt completely spent at the end of 2012, I wouldn't have made that decision to think, I don't want to be doing this anymore. I want there to be a different way and I'm going to follow my curiosity into investigating what that might look like. And self-compassion is always the answer. It's actually the root of everything. It's my favorite piece of the curriculum is to talk about self-compassion because I think when we can cultivate self-kindness over self-judgment, when we see that our struggles are part of a common humanity and not just ours, then we can recognize how would I treat somebody feeling like this? You know, how would I treat my best friend if they were feeling like this? What advice or warmth or compassion would I offer them? And what does it look like to offer that to myself? How can I treat myself with the same kind of kindness and warmth and support that I would my best friend if they were feeling this way? You know, what boundaries might I need to set that I haven't set before? I think it's very hard for people to set boundaries if they don't have a good level of self-compassion because they don't necessarily think they're worth it. So self-compassion for me is kind of the root of everything.
Thank you. And so finally, what are you most proud of so far in your journey in business?
I think that I set my mind to making a career change and I was vulnerable enough to kind of sit in the uncertainty of what that looked like. It wasn't a straight linear line. It was, you know, it was very much that meme of, you know, that starting in one point and then that big messy bit and, you know, kind of being spat out into the other end, knowing that there's another big messy bit kind of coming ahead. But And, you know, that I'm still self-employed 10 years later doing work that I know that makes people's lives braver and more loving.
And so if people are like, I want to be in her orbit, I want to go to a workshop, I want to work with Kylie in some way, what is next for you and where is the best place for people to connect with you?
Yeah, so my website is ofkin.com. So like next of kin, but without the next, just ofkin.com. And if you go into there, you'll see the different programs that I offer. So there's a shop where you can go in and, you know, enroll in a public program. I've got one coming up at the end of April, but I also run programs in-house for companies and organizations and teams. So you can send an inquiry there. I'm on Instagram at ofkin. And I have a monthly newsletter that goes out. So you can also subscribe at ofkin.com/subscribe to be in my newsletter.
Maisie, it's always so nice to catch up with you, and we don't do it nearly enough. Thank you so much. And also, we're recording this in a 36 degree day and you don't have a fan on and I don't have a fan on. So go us. But it's so appreciated. Thank you so much, Kylie.
From my rosy cheeks to yours, thank you for this opportunity. And I absolutely love everything you do. So it's been a thrill.
Oh, bye.
Bye.
Honestly, I know I said this at the start of this episode, but my goodness, I could talk to Kylie for hours on end. She's just one of those people that inspires and lights you up and makes you think really deeply and question things and get curious. And those are just the best type of people to be in conversation and to be in life with. So I'm really thankful that Kylie is in my life and in your lives now through this podcast, if you don't already know her. If you are keen to check out her upcoming workshops or look into how you might take some of her leadership programs and bring them into your place of work, then you can find all the information at ofkin.com. That's ofkin.com. And of course, we'll link to that in the show notes. You can also reach out and connect with Kylie through Instagram, which is just on over at ofkin. Again, ofkin. So I would love to know as well what you took away most from this. What are you going to implement? What might change? What might you adapt based on today's conversation all about leadership with Kylie from ofkin? So of course, I'm going to talk about two things that really came up for me. And there was so much. And I know that I will listen to this again when it comes out. And I'm sure there'll be more things that really speak to me. The first that I'm going to highlight, and I think I'm highlighting it because in so many places that I've worked prior to starting my own business, this was not a key priority, I would say, of that employment. And that was this idea of being psychologically safe in the workplace, and that we think about sense of belonging and fostering this great culture. A lot of it comes down to those things that Kylie talked about, those sort of ideas of, can I contribute? Am I welcome here? Is my whole self welcome here? Am I seen as a human and not just, you know, this productivity exporting robot? Am I talked to as if I have other things going on in my life? And I have to say, in some places that I've worked, and really, it really, I think, hugely comes down to the leadership, funny enough, rather than necessarily that brand. Or, you know, you might work in one place and have a great environment, and then, you know, the leadership changes, and then you work in the same place, or somebody else comes in and has a horrible experience. But in lots of the places that I've worked, I think a huge part of it was the productivity output, and how much can you do, and how late can you stay, and how early can you come in, and how much can we get out of you? How much can we squeeze out of you? And I know in certain places that I worked, different areas of my life were never discussed. So in particular places, never being asked about my children or child at that time, or other places where, you know, there was just no interest in who you are as a person outside. It was all about how quickly you can get through things and how much we can get out of you. And so I think, I would hope that the boats are, you know, shifting and things are, the tides are changing, but it's still a huge thing. I think a lot of people will still employ people to do these many tasks, or get through this, or how much can you get done, or am I paying you hourly, et cetera, et cetera. And we don't take the time to just have that human interaction with people. And I love that Kylie gave so many ideas for the questions that you as the leader can ask yourself in a business environment, but also in your life, about how am I really fostering a sense of belonging, and how am I bringing that psychologically safe environment to life. So that was the first one. And she talked about Timothy Clark, and I'm sure there's lots of other references that Kylie talked about in this podcast, and we'll link to them in the show notes. For this episode, you'll be able to find it at mydailybusiness.com/podcast/388. The other thing that really spoke to me from my chat with Kylie is the idea of leadership in life, and not just looking at it from a business perspective, but also, how am I showing up in life, and how am I leading myself, and what sort of things are really important to me, and what are the things that need to be front and center and a priority for me? And as I said in the chat with Kylie, it reminded me of a quote, well, not from Oprah, but one that Oprah has talked about many times, and I remember hearing it when I was quite young, and I have since looked it up to make sure that I have the exact quote. And what she said is from Invictus by the poet William Ernest Henley, And the last stanza in that poem says, "It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." And I remember hearing this, I probably was about 13 when I was watching an episode of Oprah with my mum, and she said that, and I remember looking it up, and I was super into poetry at that time. And my mum was a huge fan of poetry, and my parents, being Irish, were quite into a lot of the Irish poets, and we had different poetry on the walls around. I remember particularly in the kitchen, we had these two big poems up. And so I was quite into that. And I remember it really stuck with me, that idea of I can steer this ship. You know, I can be the captain of my soul. I can have some agency over my fate. Now, I know I'm saying that from a very privileged position living in Australia. I'm a white woman. I understand that. And I understand that, you know, we cannot control everything that comes into our lives. And especially right now, there is conflict, there is war, there is so many horrible, horrific things happening all over the world. And I'm not for a minute being like, oh, you just need to believe that you're the captain of the soul. But I think for a lot of people listening to this, you have a huge amount of agency and you have a huge amount of choice in how you show up in life. And sometimes we can forget that in the humdrum of the day-to-day. And I love that Kylie talked about that leadership of self and how we lead in our lives. And I think it's something that we don't think about enough. And as she said, we've all been conditioned, especially in the West, to think of leadership in a very narrow confinement. So I would urge you to think about your own version of leadership and what does that look like. And again, if you're interested in checking out the work that Kylie does, and it's such important work, and her workshops, you can find all of that at ofkin.com, or again, you can find it over on Instagram. You can follow her and see what she's up to at ofkin. So that is it for today's small business interview. I just want to again say a massive thank you to Kylie for this. I know that some of you listening will have taken part in the Business for Floods and Business for Bushfires fundraising activities that Kylie and I put on. And she is that type of person that's like, okay, how can I help? What's happening? How can I help? How can I do more? And it just comes across in everything that she does in business. And again, it was just an absolute delight to listen to her. If you want to go through any of this in text format, or you want to check out links to the books and the other resources that Kylie suggested, you can find all of that at mydailybusiness.com/podcast/388. And if you found this useful and you really enjoyed this interview, I would love it so, so much if you could leave a review, hit the stars, and help us get found by other small business owners who potentially really need to learn about leadership in their lives right now. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next time. Bye. Thanks for listening to the My Daily Business podcast. For a range of tools to help you grow and start your business, including coaching programs, courses, and templates, check out our shop at mydailybusiness.com/shop. And if you want to get in touch, you can do that via email, hello@mydailybusiness.com, or you can hit us up on Instagram @mydailybusiness_. You can find us on TikTok @mydailybusiness, or find me, Fiona Clarkey, on LinkedIn. I look forward to connecting.